There seems to be some confusion amongst Johannesburg residents as there are conflicting reports on water restrictions. While Rand Water said there were restrictions advising people not to water their gardens and wash cars between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m., the city of Joburg and Ekurhuleni denied having restrictions in place. On Tuesday, Rand Water said on the government news agency website that restrictions have been imposed. Several media and social media reports stated that all restrictions have been imposed, but both municipalities said their reservoirs had enough water not to do so. We discussed the water concerns with Dr. Anthony Turton of the Center of Environmental Management at the University of Free State. Dr. Anthony, good morning to you and welcome to the program.
Good morning to you and your listeners, and thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us. What are the main reasons of war, or which are the main resources or sources of water for Gauteng area, those especially around Johannesburg?
Gauteng gets its water through Rand Water, which is one of the largest bulk water suppliers in the world, not in South Africa, in the entire world. It's a massive organization. There are two main sources of water. There are actually three sources of water, but there are two major ones. The one is the Tugela River Basin in KZN, where water is pumped uphill over the Drakensberg Mountains using surplus energy on the Eskom grid. And it is stored in the Stadfontein Dam on top of the mountain. And then when Eskom needs energy for peak demand periods, the water is released on the other side, flowing into the Vaal River system, where two-thirds of the energy used to pump it uphill is then recovered and put back into the grid. And then the second major supply of water is the Lesotho Highlands scheme, particularly the Kutsi and Mahali dams, and there are other dams coming online. There's a third source of water, which is the dolomitic water on the far west rand, and that's a big well field that is almost 100 years old and that's been working very well for a long time, but that is now becoming contaminated with acid mine drainage. So those are the three sources of water for Johannesburg.
Yes, a fascinating insight that you share with us in that regard. Now, the city of Johannesburg seems to believe that we have adequate water supplies, but the very hot dry weather we're expecting seems to indicate that we are in trouble.
You know, I'm a scientist and I work with facts, so I don't work with rhetoric and opinion. So you know, the facts of the matter are the following. At the moment, we are in what appears to be the worst drought in 30 years. Certainly, KZN is absolutely deeply gripped in this drought, the worst in 30 years. Other parts of the country, all indications are that we are in this drought. We are currently experiencing an El Nino event, and this El Nino event is a global event. So let's contextualize the South African problem globally. If you look just in the recent month, the last month, we've been seeing major droughts in California and Texas in the United States. As recently as 1 or 2 weeks ago, we saw, I think it was Hurricane Patricia, I think it was, that was the largest recorded hurricane ever that hit Mexico. And the significance there is that it came off the Pacific Ocean, not off the Gulf of Mexico, so that's completely strange and unusual. We also have one of the hottest periods on record in India at the moment, and the monsoon may well also be disturbed. And we now have the same situation in Southern Africa. So in other words, we are part of a global pattern of weather. So that's something over which no human being has got any control, but we are impacted by that. But then into that equation, we get other factors, for example, such as rapid population mobilization and urbanization over the last couple of decades. And unfortunately, we have not kept pace with the infrastructure upgrade. So the amount of water held in strategic storage in reservoirs and dams, etc., per capita of person, of individual, is now under severe strain. So consequently, any breakdown in the system or any disruption to the bulk water supply coming into the system is going to have a knock-on effect. Whether there's a rhetoric to the contrary or not, it really, that is irrelevant.
You spoke about Rand Water and the sources for the water. What are the challenges Rand Water faces in ensuring that we do not see water restrictions?
Well, yeah, there are a number of significant challenges, and the one challenge I would like to raise particularly, I'm pushing this very hard at the moment on the national agenda, we have a sewage crisis in South Africa. So if you take, for example, the bulk strategic storage for Rand Water, in fact, is Vaal Dam. And Vaal Dam at the moment, under drought conditions, is kept low. It's deliberately not kept full because of evaporation of losses. But there's at least six sewage works that discharge partially treated sewage into the the wall dam system. Now I'm working on a project that's about to be published in the next couple of days, where we've looked at this whole national sewage issue, and it's a crisis. If you take, I'll just give you some numbers. Our total volume of water in strategic storage in all of our dams, assuming all the dams are fully across the country, is 38 billion cubic meters. 38 billion cubic meters, okay? Mm. Now, the total daily flow of sewage over the entire country is 5,000 megaliters. A megaliter is a million liters. That's 5,000 million liters or 5 billion liters of sewage every day. Of that, I'm going to round off the numbers. Of that, approximately 20% is treated to a reasonable standard where it's discharged back into the system. So that's 1,000 megaliters or 1 billion liters is treated to a reasonable standard. The rest, 4,000 megaliters or 4 billion liters of water of untreated or partially treated sewage enters the rivers and dams of the country. Now, a significant portion of that goes into not only Hartbeespoort Dam, but also into Vaal Dam. And Vaal Dam is a source of water for Johannesburg. So now we have the situation where, under conditions of drought, a couple of things happen. The first thing is that the rivers are already distressed. There's a reduced flow of water under natural conditions. But secondly, the temperature of the water column rises. So if you have an increase in the temperature in the presence of sewage, then the bacteria go into overdrive and they start multiplying very, very rapidly. So I foresee a situation in the current summer that we're in. It would not surprise me at all before the end of the summer that we do not start seeing health-related risks, because whether we like it or not, the science is very, very well understood about these things. And the science tells us that the elevated flows of sewage, particularly phosphate and nitrate, creates ideal conditions for a certain bacteria to grow. That bacteria, we understand it very well. It's called Microcystis aeruginosa, and it produces a toxin called microcystin, and anybody that's educated can Google this and find all the literature on it. And microcystin toxin, we've got the highest levels of microcystin toxin in our bulk water supply in South Africa. Approximately two-thirds of the water in our 50 largest dams are contaminated, and this data comes from a recent peer-reviewed scientific paper published by the CSIR. Now, these are all scientific facts, but now the problem is that our bulk water treatment plants are not capable of removing that microcystin toxin. So even the most sophisticated bulk water treatment that the Rand Water owns does not have the ability to remove that toxin. Now, these are all facts. So we can choose politically to spin the story another way or to say other things. But the fact of the matter is, that we have the highest levels of microcystin contamination in the world. The fact is that no current water treatment technology on the bulk water side removes microcystins. So therefore, the prudent thing to do, and I'm acting as a prudent scientist now, is to inform the public of this matter, because it's in their interest to understand it, because in the short-term solution, one's going to have to individually start dealing with that. And we can only deal with that, if there's an educated public out there that fully appreciates it. So in my professional opinion, while the drought is important, it's terribly important, what the drought's going to do is it's going to concentrate issues, it's going to focus issues, and the issues that are going to come out of this, one of them will be the state of infrastructure management in the country. The other thing will be this very, very vexing issue of CADA deployment. That is a national policy that's going to have to be dealt with in one way or another. And the other important thing, I think, is this whole thing about human health risks, as we are currently recycling sewage water into the drinking water streams, but the technology we're using to clean it up is, in my professional opinion, inappropriate.
Yes, this is an issue that you touched on. You spoke about the Lesotho Highlands water scheme, and we know that this was built to supply Gauteng and the agricultural areas in the surrounding areas with water. Now, the second phase of the scheme is under construction, but has already been delayed by at least 2 years. What impact is that itself having on our water supply?
Well, if we unpack the Lesotho Highlands project, it's one of the biggest single infrastructural projects in the world. It's smaller than the Turkey Gap project, the Great Anatolia project. That's about 10 or 20 times bigger than the Lesotho Highlands project, but it's still a major piece of infrastructural development. Now, if you drill down, you talk about phase two. Phase one was broken into 1A and 1B. Now, phase 1B was the Mohali Dam. And the yield from Mahali Dam, the total entire yield from Mahali Dam has been lost before it gets to Vaal Dam. So in other words, the capital that we put aside to pay for the infrastructure of Mahali Dam, Phase 1B, has been totally wasted because no taxpayers received any benefit from it. And you ask the question, where's this water gone? Well, it's been stolen. It's been stolen mostly by farmers who are illegally pumping the water from the river, which has now got an increased flow of water in times of drought. So that poses another technical question, and that technical question is it wise for us to discharge this water into the river at Liebenberg's Vlei and allow it to flow by gravity through the Vaal River system? So there's currently one engineering project underway where they're looking at the feasibility of putting that water into a pipe and gravity feeding it almost all the way to Rand Water. Now, that the benefit of that is firstly that people can't steal it. The second benefit is that because it's gravity fed, you can actually put hydro plants in the pipeline, and you can actually generate electricity as it's flowing through the system. But of course, the third issue is that the water is then not contaminated. It comes out literally almost as pristine mountain water. So very, very high quality water that will be delivered at Rand Water. Of course, the downside is there'll be a tremendous cost to this. But I believe that, you know, the cost-benefit analysis has to be understood properly, and I think that it's probably a wise investment for South Africa to make.
Overall, when we look at it, it seems as though that South Africans have not really been willing to come to the party here in terms of holding back. South Africans seem to be very reluctant to save water. You often see taps running for hours. Burst water pipes continue to pump out water without it being fixed for days. We wash our cars, water our garden. Are we going to pay the price for the abuse of our water supply?
Well, yes, I think we are, and I think there's a very important role to be played by religious leaders in this regard, because religious leaders have got a lot of authority in society, and in a lot of religions in South Africa, water plays a very, very central role. It's almost a role that's got spiritual value. So I think that this is an important thing that we should start inculcating in society, that we must respect water. Water has got a spiritual value. There's got all sorts of other values to water other than purely an economic value. So I think if we start getting that in place once again, we start respecting water, that's the first step in the right direction. But secondly, we live in a democracy. And the privilege of living in a democracy means that we have the individual citizen has the authority to hold their elected officials accountable. And unless we hold elected officials accountable, we're going to get more of the same bad behavior. So I think these are the two elements of the solution.
Professor Dr. Anthony, we really appreciate your time this morning. You've shared fascinating insight with regards to the entire water infrastructure and also about the challenges that we're facing. Thank you very much and have a lovely day.
Sir, I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yes, I was really blown away with the information that he shared on our various systems in place, the Tugela water coming all the way, being pumped up the mountain, being stored, and at need being released from the mountains of Drakensberg and Syfontein, and then also the Lesotho Highlands project. So some highly sophisticated projects that have been carried out and are being implemented in South Africa.